Oh, here's a nice verse. It starts Pushani Karshe. It's on page number 117. This is mantra 16. Pushani Karshe Yamasurya Pradyapatya Vyuharashmin Samuha Tejo yate rupang kalyanatamam tate pashyamyo savasau purusha somasmi. So I'll say out the Sanskrit word and then please repeat and we'll do call and response all the way through the word meanings. Pushan. Nice and loud. Pushan. O maintainer. Ekarshe. The primeval philosopher. Yama. The regulating principle. Surya, the destination of the Suris, great devotees. Prajapatya, the well-wisher of the Prajapatis, progenitors of mankind. Vyuha, kindly remove. Rashmin, the rays. Samuha, kindly withdraw. Tejaha, effulgence. Yet, so that. Te, your. Rupam, form. Kalyanatamam, most auspicious. Tut, that. Te, your. Pashyami, I may see. Yaha, one who is. Asau, like the sun. Asau, that. Purusha, personality of Godhead. Saha, myself. Aham, I. Asmi, am. So just from hearing the Sanskrit and the word for word, surely there's a pattern, or you must have noticed some things about it. So before we read the translation, just what kind of things have you noted about this verse, anything you've observed? And bring down the mic so we can hear. What kind of verse is this, would you say? Would you categorize it? Sheetal's got something to say.
Basically, what I see first is like he's the ultimate philosopher. There is nothing beyond him.
Who?
Krishna.
Okay, so it's a verse, somebody speaking about Krishna.
Right.
Right, okay.
That's...
Nice, okay, well that's a good observation. What else about a verse? It's something, it's being spoken about Krishna. Any other things? Any particular words you noticed that you found interesting in the word for word? It's a good way to learn a verse. You go through, look really carefully at it, and think about what it means, and where it's, what its meanings are. How about yama? What does yama mean in this verse? Pushani karshe yama. Yama. Regulating principle. Is that something? This is a name for Krishna. Pushani karshe yama surya prajapatya. So. He's calling out to Krishna different names, right? So yama means regulating principle. So where do you see the regulating principle? Anywhere? How about in your heartbeat? Heart's beating regularly, isn't it? Hopefully. Your breath is going on a regular basis. Sunshine is coming on a regular basis. You can set your watch by it. The whole universe is going on by this yama principle. So who's behind it? He's praying to that person. He's calling him yama, that purusha who's controlling everything, who's regulating it. What other names are in this that you see? Yes, meaning?
The original rishi.
The original rishi. So this means someone, this talking about Krishna. There are many rishis, but he's the Ekarishi. Ekarshe. He's the first one. He's the Adi Guru, the the teacher of everyone. He's the source of everyone. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. And he's the one who's giving intelligence to everyone. He's within the heart of every living entity. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yovidatati kaman. He's supplying everyone's intelligence. He's supplying everyone's welfare, everything. What other names?
Kalyanam.
Kalyanatamam. Meaning?
Most auspicious.
So, most auspicious. Kalyanatamam. Yes, the most auspicious. So, Krishna is the source of all auspicity, everything else. Anything connected with Krishna is also auspicious. Anything that's in relationship with Krishna is also transcendental. And anything that doesn't have a relationship with Krishna is what?
That is...
What do you say? Highly inauspicious. What is anything that's not related to Krishna? It's a trick question.
Actually, nothing is exclusive of Krishna.
There you go. So what does it mean if you see something that's not related to Krishna?
Oh, it's nothing. Everything is inclusive of Lord Krishna.
It's something. It's called Maya. It's no, that no. Which is not. So this is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Ritirtam yapratieta na pratieta chatmani tadvidyara manomhayam. Yata paso yata tamaha. Krishna says to Brahma in the Chatur Shloki Bhagavatam, the first four shlokas from which the Bhagavatam expanded, Rittertam yat pratyeta. If you see anything which doesn't have a relationship to me, know that to be my illusory energy, because actually everything has a relationship with Krishna. Everything emanates from Krishna, everything has a connection. So if I see something as separate, that's called Maya, that which is not. What else? How about the first word? Pushan. What about that? Pushan. Krishna is the maintainer, right? How is he maintaining? I'm maintaining, aren't I? I go to my job, I work hard, I get money, I'm the one maintaining. Where does my money come from? From my boss, right? It's a transformation of Krishna's energy. Do you know a verse where you can back that up? You have any verses from the Bhagavatam or anything? There's a nice one in the seventh canto from Prahlad Maharaj where he talks about how all of one's possessions, everything one thinks one has, including the money we get from our livelihood, it's actually all coming from Krishna. The support we get from our parents. Krishna says in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, I'm the mother, I'm the father, I'm the grandsire. So he's actually the mother and father. Behind our mother and father is actually Krishna. They're able to support us through his power, his energy. Pushan. This is one of the limbs of surrender also, out of the six kinds of processes of surrender, to understand that Krishna is Pushan. That he's the maintainer. And to take that exclusively, that only Krishna is maintaining me, nobody else. What else? Pushan ekarishi yama surya. How about that? The destination of the suris, the great devotees. So who can say something about how Krishna is the destination of the suris? Who do we know that was a suri whose destination was Krishna? Anybody can think of? Ambarish Maharaj. His destination was Krishna. What other suris? Their destination was Krishna. Parikshit Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj. Bhishma Dev, all the great suris. So Krishna says, Yanti Deva Vrta Devan Pitrin Yanti Pratir Vrta Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja Yanti Mam Yajinopi Mam. Everybody's after something. Everyone wants to go somewhere. So he says, if you want to go to the Devas, then you worship the devas. Those who worship the devas go to the devas. Those who worship ghosts and spirits, they attain the ghosts and spirits. Those who worship human beings, they live amongst the human beings. And those who worship me, they come to me. So if someone just follows Krishna's simple instruction, manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru, what does he say? Think of me, bow down to me, become my devotee and worship me. That's all he asks. Then that person will come to Krishna. Become my devotee and you'll come to Krishna. And just by fixing one's mind on Krishna, then that will take us back home, back to Godhead. Who can give a verse that says that? If you fix your mind upon Krishna, then not only will you go to Krishna, but everything you need will be carried. Everything you lack will be carried to you. And everything that you have will be preserved. Yoga kshemam bahamyaham is the last part of it. Could you look it up from the last part? If you look in the verse index, it'll show you the first and the third line, so you may be out of luck on that. It's in the ninth chapter. Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paripasate tesham nityabdyuktanam yoga kshemam bahamyaham. So Krishna says, for those whose minds are always fixed in me, in ananya bhakti, without deviation, they're always thinking of me. To them I care what they lack and I preserve what they have. And in the end, anyone who thinks of Krishna's divine form, understands Krishna's appearance in this world and his activities are not ordinary, they're divine. That person also doesn't take another birth in this material world. It goes back to Godhead. Right? Janma karma chabe divyam evam yo viti tatvata. Tyaktva deham punar janma naitimam eti sumarjuna. Anyone who understands that my form and activities are transcendental, they're not ordinary, they're transcendental. To that person, tyakvadeham punarjanma. When they give up this body, they don't take birth again in the material world, they go back to Godhead. So Krishna is Surya, the destination of the Suris. So if you become a Suri, then your destination is back to Godhead, assured by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Prajapatya, the well-wisher of the Prajapatis. Look up Ananyas Chintayantamam, the first line. You found it? In the verse index.
It's 922 or 23.
922. The well-wisher of the Prajapatis, progenitors of mankind. Who was one of the Prajapatis and how was Krishna his well-wisher? How about Swayambhuva Manu? Krishna appeared before Swayambhuva Manu. What did Swayambhuva ask Krishna? He meditated for thousands of years and then he asked, he had some desire. What was it? He wanted a wife. So when Krishna appeared, he fulfilled his desire and said, in a few days, you'll have a wife. He was out in the jungle meditating, and Krishna arranged that he got a good wife. So, he's the well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind. And what else? Here he's asking, Vyuha, kindly remove Rashmin, the rays. Samuha, kindly withdraw them. Teja, your effulgence, so he can see your form. The Kalyanatamam Rupam, the most auspicious form he wants to see. So beyond the effulgence of Krishna, this Brahmajyoti, it emanates from Krishna's body. The Brahmajyoti, which is described in the Brahma Sanghita, Yasya Prabha Prabhabato Jagadundakoti Koti Shashesha Vasudadi Vibhuti Binam Tad Brahma Nishkalam Anantam Ashesha Bhutam Govindamari Purusham Dhamaham Bhajami. Just like in the wintertime, everything goes dormant. All the plants, they go to sleep. The bulbs, they don't grow. But as soon as the sun starts to come back in, then everything comes alive again in the spring. Just by the sun's influence, where does all the food come from in this world? From the sun. It's all being produced from the sun. All the life on this planet is coming from the sun. The sun's energy is infusing everything with life. And similarly, the Brahma Jyoti gives life to everything in the entire universe. It pervades everything. It's coming from Krishna's body, his bodily effulgence, emanating from Goloka Vrindavan. Yasya prapa prabhapato jagadandakoti. All over all the universes, that effulgence is manifested. And that's how everything manifests, through the power of that effulgence. You know, for the last verse in the Brahma Samhita, where Krishna says, listen, O Vidhi, I am the seed. I'm the fundamental principle of all animate, inanimate objects. And he tells Brahma is by burying this fiery energy that you create this phenomenal world, this power of the Brahma Jyoti. So he's the source of that, but the pure devotees, they want to see his auspicious form, Kalinatamam Rupam, the auspicious form of the Lord. And they're saying, please, I don't want to see the effulgence, I want to see you. And Pashyami, I may see you. Asau. So then he says, just like you are the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, like unto the sun, as am I, because we're like little particles. We're just like Krishna. Just like Krishna. In fact, the Vedanta Sutra and the Upanishads, when they start to bring us out of our cave, we're in a cave in darkness, and someone's trying to come in and tell us what the sun looks like. So in order to do that, they might make a little hole, and then through that hole, some sunlight may come in and come onto the wall. And then they'll say, see, that's the sun. That's the sun. That's not the sun, but it's sun-like. So what's the thing that most resembles God in this world? If you look around, what's the most one thing? Most like God, more than anything else. You. Yourself. Because you're a particle of conscious. God is abhijñān swarāt. He's fully conscious and he's independent. So the thing you can analyze that's most like the sun, says the Upanishad, that's most like Krishna, that's most like God, is yourself. That's why this is, verse is saying, yasāvasāva purushā somāsmi, saying just like unto the sun, as am I. So similarly, just like, we're just like Krishna. So if you look at yourself, you can understand what is the nature of God. Because you're conscious. What is consciousness? Practically, it's inconceivable. Ascharyavat paschati kascharinam, ascharyavat varati tataiva chanya, ascharyavat chayanamanya shunoti shutvap yenam vedana chayava kaschit. Krishna says that the soul is amazing. Some see him as amazing, some hear him as amazing, some even after hearing about him can't understand him at all. But one thing's for sure, the soul is amazing. You think about your own consciousness, think about somebody else's consciousness. Individual particles of consciousness. Your little creator also. You create your entire reality. You create your environment around you. Because you're just like Krishna, only tiny, tiny. So Upanishads start there and they say, you want to see God? Look at yourself. It's conscious like that. Only he's unlimitedly conscious. Where we're conscious of the material body. As Krishna brings up in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Kshetrajñam chapimam vidhi sarva kshetrishu bharata kshetra kshetrajñayo jñanam yatach jñanam matam mama. He says, here's what knowledge is. Knowledge means to understand that there's a field, that's the body, and the knower of the field, that's the soul. Yes, use the mic.
Some temples, there is mirror. Instead of the deity, it is just the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Which is for the deity, it is just the mirror. So if we just pray, we'll just see the reflection.
Mm-hmm.
So is it, what is the opinion of ISKCON on that kind of worship?
That's a mistaken idea. Nowhere in the Shastra does it say that we worship ourselves or worship the living entity. The Upanishads are pointing out that we're something like Krishna, but that's only for give us some understanding. We're tiny and Krishna is great. Krishna is worshipable and we're the worshiper. So Shastra doesn't recommend, Krishna doesn't recommend in the Bhagavad Gita to worship yourself. He says there are people that do that. Jnana yagnina chapyanye yajanto mam upasite katvena pratakvena bahuta vishvato mukham. He mentions that there are people, some people, they worship God in different ways. They think I'm God. They worship themselves. They think the universe is God. They worship the universe. But all of these things are indirect and a misunderstanding, actually. Even those who worship demigods. Demigods are limbs of the Lord. They're angas of the Lord. But the Lord is the complete whole. So we can't get the same result from worshiping ourselves. Krishna can worship himself. In fact, he does. In Dwarka, every morning when he wakes up, he meditates on himself, because who else is he going to meditate on? He's the supreme whole. If we meditate on ourselves, we're a part of the whole, but we're not the whole. The yogis can rightly meditate on the Lord within the heart. But if you look in a mirror, what are you going to see except your material body? So ISKCON follows Bhagavad Gita, and nowhere in Bhagavad Gita does Krishna recommend that we worship ourselves. It's not a correct idea. Oh, okay. That's allowed. Okay, so let's hear the purport. The sun and its rays are one and the same quality. Similarly, the Lord and the living entities are one and the same quality. The sun is one, but the molecules of the sun's rays are innumerable. The sun's rays constitute part of the sun, and the sun and its rays conjointly constitute the complete sun. Within the sun itself resides the sun god, and similarly within the supreme spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan, from which the Brahmajyoti effulgence is emanating, the Lord enjoys his eternal pastimes, as verified in the Brahma Sanghita 5:29. Chintamani prakara sadmasu kalparviksha lakshavriteshu sudabhira bipalayantam lakshmi sahasra shatasam brahmasevyamanam govindamari purushang tamahang bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor who is tending the cows, fulfilling all desires in abodes filled with spiritual gems and surrounded by millions of wish-fulfilling trees. He is always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis, or goddesses of fortune. The Brahmajyoti is described in the Brahma Sanghita as the rays emanating from that supreme spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan, just as the sun's rays emanate from the sun globe. Until one surpasses the glare of the Brahmajyoti, one cannot receive information of the land of the Lord. The impersonalist philosophers, blind as they are by the dazzling Brahmajyoti, can realize neither the factual abode of the Lord nor his transcendental form. Limited by their poor fund of knowledge, such impersonalist thinkers cannot understand the all-transcendental form of Lord Krishna. In this prayer, therefore, Sri Ishapanishad petitions the Lord to remove the effulgent rays of the Brahmajyoti so that the pure devotee can see his all-blissful transcendental form. By realizing the impersonal Brahmajyoti, one experiences the auspicious aspect of the Supreme, and by realizing the Paramatma, or the all-pervading feature of the Supreme, one experiences an even more auspicious enlightenment. But by meeting the personality of God and himself face to face, the devotee experiences the most auspicious feature of the Supreme. Since he is addressed as the primeval philosopher and maintainer and well-wisher of the universe, the Supreme Truth cannot be impersonal. This is the verdict of Sri Ishapanishad. The word Pushan, maintainer, is especially significant, for although the Lord maintains all beings, he specifically maintains his devotees. After surpassing the impersonal Brahmajyoti and seeing the personal aspect of the Lord and his most auspicious eternal form, the devotee realizes the absolute truth in full. In his Bhagavad Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami states, "The complete conception of the absolute truth is realized in the personality of Godhead because he is almighty and possesses full transcendental potencies. The full potency of the absolute truth is not realized in the Brahmajyoti. Therefore, Brahman realization is only partial realization of the personality of Godhead. O learned sages, the first syllable of the word Bhagavan, Bha, has two meanings. The first is one who fully maintains, and the second is guardian. The second syllable, ga, means guide, leader, or creator. The syllable, van, indicates that every being lives in him and that he also lives in every being. In other words, the transcendental sound, Bhagavan, represents infinite knowledge, potency, energy, opulence, strength, and influence, all without a tinge of material inebriety. The Lord fully maintains his unalloyed devotees, and he guides them progressively on the path toward devotional perfection. As the leader of his devotees, he ultimately awards the desired results of devotional service by giving himself to them. The devotees of the Lord see the Lord eye to eye by his causeless mercy. Thus the Lord helps his devotees reach the supermost spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan. Being the creator, he can bestow all necessary qualifications upon his devotees so that they can ultimately reach him. The Lord is the cause of all causes. In other words, since there is nothing that caused him, he is the original cause. Consequently, he enjoys his own self by manifesting his own internal potency. The external potency is not exactly manifested by him, for he expands himself as the Purushas, and it is in these forms that he maintains the features of the material manifestation. By such expansions, he creates, maintains, and annihilates the cosmic manifestation. The living entities are also differentiated expansions of the Lord's self, and because some of them desire to be lords and imitate the Supreme Lord, he allows them to enter into the cosmic creation with the option to fully utilize their propensity to lord it over nature. Should I read that again? The living entities are also differentiated expansions of the Lord's self, and because some of them desire to be lords and imitate the Supreme Lord, he allows them to enter into the cosmic creation with the option to fully utilize their propensity to lord it over nature. Because of the presence of his parts and parcels, the living entities, the entire phenomenal world is stirred into action and reaction. Thus, the living entities are given full facilities to lord it over material nature. But the ultimate controller is the Lord himself in his plenary feature as Paramatma, the Supersoul, who is one of the Purushas. Any questions about that? It's profound, isn't it? Explains a lot of stuff. Yes? Yeah. Okay, Mike.
Hello. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
The question, actually I want to talk about the previous conversation between the, when you asked, when I answered that nothing is exclusive of God, Lord Krishna, then you told that if something looks different, that may be Maya, right?
Yes.
My question is, Maya is also comes, it Maya, in my opinion, it also emanates from Lord, not?
Correct.
Then as the Maya does. Is also the part of Lord.
Yes. It's only a perspective of the living entity that who's mistakenly is in a dreamlike state. Because the soul has independence, just like Krishna has independence.
Okay, my further question is, how the Maya is different from Krishna? How a person, a human being, will understand this? Because it is very difficult to understand Maya, right?
Yeah, Maya is like darkness and Krishna is like the sun. So when there's darkness or there's fog and a pedestrian's way is obstructed, then if the light comes, or if the sun burns off the fog, then one can see one's way. So similarly, as soon as Krishna is present, then there's no more darkness.
Yeah.
Bhayam dvitiya binibeshita syad ishada petasya viparya yo smritihi tanmayaya to buddha abhajat tam bhaktyaika yesham guru devatatma. The Kavi Yogendra gives this explanation of this situation in the Bhagavatam, where he says that when one becomes absorbed in something that he thinks is separate from the Lord, this means dvitiya, he sees two things. Actually, there's only one. Advaya jnana tattva. Krishna is, there's one thing. but he's divided into varieties. But anti tattva vidas tattvam yaj gyanamadvayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdite. Krishna has three aspects himself: his personality, his localized expansion, the super soul, and also the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. And he also expands himself into the material energy. This he calls in the Bhagavad Gita the separated material energies. Bhumir apu analo vayu kammano bhudir evacha ahankara ittiyam me bina prakritir ashtada. Earth, wire, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Altogether, these eight comprise my separated material energies. So it's being explained here in this paragraph that it says the living entities are also differentiated expansions of the Lord's Self. They are part of His internal energy, explained in Bhagavad Gita. Aparemitastonyam prakritim vidimi param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. Krishna says, besides this inferior energy, which I just named, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, there's a superior energy mind, which are the living entities who have fallen under the control of the material nature. Now, how does the superior energy fall under the control of the material nature? It's because we're tiny. Although we're parts of Krishna, the material nature is controlled by Krishna. Maya jakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. It's going on by His control. And it's divine nature also. Daivahiyesha gunamayi ma ma maya durayaya. Krishna's maya is also controlled by Krishna. So the living entity can fall under the control of maya, even though he's divine. He's a divine spark of the Supreme. So how he comes out of that situation is described in the verse I'm giving from the Bhagavatam, which is, Payam dvitiya abhinipesha tasyad. When I see something separate from Krishna, if I think there's anything separate from Krishna, first of all, that's maya, because there is nothing separate from Krishna. And what is the result of that? Payam, fear. There's a fearfulness that comes about. It's manifested that I think I'm my material body, I think I have something I possess in this world, and I think, therefore, there's the possibility of losing it. I can lose my mother, I can lose my father, I can lose my husband, I can lose my wife, I can lose this body, I can lose my car, I can lose my house, I can lose my money. Everything, I've identified myself in this material world. In fact, I've projected myself into material objects. That's why they're dear to me. Your house is dear to you because you live in it. If you hear about a house getting smashed somewhere in Idaho today, you might take notice for a couple seconds and then you'll change the channel. But if you hear about your house getting smashed somewhere in Cupertino or wherever you live, you'll really take notice. And you'll think, oh, my house was smashed. Why is it a big deal? Because you live there. You've projected yourself into that. Drum roll, please. Hari Bol, Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. You're welcome. So, tanmaya yato buddha abhajet tan means that one can come out of this by turning one's attention back to Krishna. Now it's turned the opposite direction. Abhinibeshita syat ito par bhayam dvitiya abhinibeshita. Abhinibeshita means you're absorbed. Ishat apetasya means we're turned the wrong direction. The soul gets turned around and he's looking the wrong way. So he doesn't see God. He sees something separate from Krishna. It's illusion. It's maya. But that maya also comes from Krishna. Everything comes from Krishna.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thus, there's a gulf of difference between the living entity, Atma, and the controlling Lord, Paramatma, the soul and the supersoul. Paramatma is the controller and the Atma is the controlled. Therefore, they are in different categories. Because the Paramatma fully cooperates with the Atma, he is known as the constant companion of the living being. Now that's kind of profound. May I read it again? Permission? Yes. Page 121, second paragraph down, last sentence of the second paragraph, which I'm about to repeat if I have permission to do so. May I please? Okay. Because the Paramatma fully cooperates with the Atma, he is known as the constant companion of the living being. Tell me, how is it that Paramatma cooperates with the Atma. Sometimes people think that I'm not getting any cooperation. Why can't I be rich? Why can't I be famous? Why can't I be happy? Why doesn't God do good things for me? I'm not a bad person. How is he cooperating with me? Any ideas? Especially if they're Shastric. Anyways, God cooperates with us? Yes. How does he cooperate?
By whatever is happening, though we consider I am doing or somebody is doing, Krishna tells clearly that it's through the three modes of material nature which acts, and ultimately it's controlled by him. So that's the way he's the cooperator. As far as the person's perception is concerned, that why he's feeling that he's not getting cooperation, there is law of karma behind, which is we are on a journey, and time is the biggest illusion. So we do think that he is not cooperating because of the past karma, reaction, which we have to pay for. As we are not the animal, we have to pay what we do.
That's some nice knowledge. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's simplify it too. Like, what is the nature of the soul? Sakchidananda Vigraha, what does that mean? Put it down in layman's terms, huh? Eternal blissful knowledge, but what is the soul's function? What does the soul actually do?
Service.
Service. And what is the quality of the soul? In other words, consciousness means what? Active means what? Looking for a D word. Yeah, desire. Desire is something that is there within consciousness. There's some desire. And so the soul desires. Krishna also desires. So on a fundamental level, talking about how Krishna is cooperating with us, just talking in layman's terms, we have desires and Krishna fulfills them. Then somebody might ask, well, it doesn't seem like I'm getting all my desires fulfilled because there's a lot of things I want that I don't have and things. And Sheetal explained that to a degree that we deserve certain things because of our karma. We're getting, according to our past activities, certain results in this life based on what we've done in the past. But it's true that Krishna fulfills our desires. Whatever we desired at any time during the creation, Krishna will fulfill that desire. Nityo nityanam, chetanas chetananam, eko bahunam, yo viditati kaman. Whatever desire we have, Krishna is the fulfiller of that desire. He's the one supreme eternal, and where there are plural eternals, which are his parts and parcels, mamayavamsho, jivaloke, anshas, they're eternal separated parts of Krishna. And the relationship is that the living entities desire and Krishna fulfills their desires. So if I'm in a bad situation, whose fault is it? It's my own fault? So if a person comes before a high court judge, someone might say, well, how come he sentenced that person to 10 years and the other person he let him free? Is it the judge's fault? Or the judge is following the law, right? So he's awarding according to the activities of the personality. So similarly, the living entity desires a certain good and bad things, and Krishna fulfills the desires. And ultimately, if one gets transcendental knowledge and desires Krishna, then the person gets the highest thing, which is Krishna. And a devotee understands this. Tatenu kamvam susamikshamano bunjana evatmakritam vipakam. Devotee thinks, whatever adverse situation is coming to me in this life, I created myself. This is knowledge, actually. Krishna points this out in the Bhagavad Gita. Do you know which chapter? There's some... go ahead. Fifth chapter? there are two verses in which this idea Krishna says, I don't assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Look at page 256. So we'll look at text 14 and 15. Now these should be empowering verses to us because we realize that we're the controllers of our own destiny. If we align ourselves properly, we align our desires properly, then we're in a good situation. So text number 14. Nakartritvam nakarmani lokasya srijati prabhu nakarma palasam yogam subhavastu pravartate. Na, never. Kartritvam, proprietorship. Na, nor. Karmani, activities. Lokasya, of the people. Srijati, creates. Prabhu, the master of the city of the body. Na, nor. Karmapal, with the results of activities. Sangyogam, connection. Subhava, the modes of material nature. Tu, but. Pravartate, act. The embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities. Nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. You pointed this out. Purport, the living entity, as will be explained in the seventh chapter, is one of the energies or natures of the Supreme Lord, but is distinct from matter, which is another nature called inferior of the Lord. Somehow the superior nature of the living entity has been in contact with material nature since time immemorial. The temporary body or material dwelling place which he obtains is the cause of varieties of activities and their resultant reactions. Living in such a conditional atmosphere, one suffers the results of the activities of the body by identifying himself in ignorance with the body. It is ignorance acquired from time immemorial that is the cause of bodily suffering and distress. As soon as the living entity becomes aloof from the activities of the body, he becomes free from the reactions as well. As long as he is in the city of the body, he appears to be the master of it, but actually he is neither its proprietor nor controller of its actions and reactions. He is simply in the midst of the material ocean, struggling for existence. The waves of the ocean are tossing him, and he has no control over them. His best solution is to get out of the water by transcendental Krishna consciousness. That alone will save him from all turmoil. Text 15. Nadate kashichit papam nachaiva sukritam vibhu agnane navratam jnanam tinam huhyanti jantavaha. Na, never. Adate, accepts. Kashichit, anyone's papam, sin. Na, nor. Cha, also. Eva, certainly, sukritam, pious activities. Vibhu, the Supreme Lord. Ajnanina, by ignorance. Avratam, covered. Jnanam, knowledge. Tena, by that. Muhyanti, are bewildered. Jantavaha, the living entities. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. Purport. The Sanskrit word vibhu means the Supreme Lord, who is full of unlimited knowledge, riches, strength, fame, beauty, and renunciation. He is always satisfied in himself, undisturbed by sinful or pious activities. He does not create a particular situation for any living entity, but the living entity, bewildered by ignorance, desires to be put into certain conditions of life, and thereby his chain of action and reaction begins. A living entity is, by superior nature, full of knowledge. Nevertheless, he is prone to be influenced by ignorance due to his limited power. The Lord is omnipotent, but the living entity is not. The Lord is vibhu, or omniscient, but the living entity is anu, or atomic. Because he is a living soul, he has the capacity to desire by his free will. Such desire is fulfilled only by the omnipotent Lord. And so, when the living entity is bewildered in his desires, the Lord allows him to fulfill those desires, but the Lord is never responsible for the actions and reactions of the particular situation which may be desired. Being in a bewildered condition, therefore, the embodied soul identifies himself with a circumstantial material body and becomes subjected to the temporary misery and happiness of life. The Lord is the constant companion of the living entity as Paramatma, or the Supersoul, and therefore he can understand the desires of the individual soul as one can smell the flavor of a flower by being near it. Desire is a subtle form of conditioning for the living entity. The Lord fulfills his desire as he deserves. Man proposes and God disposes. The individual is not, therefore, omnipotent in fulfilling his desires. The Lord, however, can fulfill all desires, and the Lord, being neutral to everyone, does not interfere with the desires of the minute, independent living entities. However, when one desires Krishna, the Lord takes special care and encourages one to desire in such a way that one can attain to him and be eternally happy. The Vedic hymns therefore declare, Esha u hyeva sadhu karma karya yati tang yam ebhyo loke bhya unininchate. Esha u eva sadhu karma karya yati yam ado ninishate. The Lord engages the living entity in pious activities so that he may be elevated. The Lord engages him in impious activities so that he may go to hell. Agno jantur anisho yam atma sukha dukaya yoho ishvara prerito gachet swargam bashu pabram evacha. The living entity is completely dependent in his distress and happiness. By the will of the Supreme, he can go to heaven or hell as a cloud is driven by the air. Therefore, the embodied soul, by his immemorial desire to avoid Krishna consciousness, causes his own bewilderment. Consequently, although he is constitutionally eternal, blissful and cognizant, due to the littleness of his existence, he forgets his constitutional position of service to the Lord and is thus entrapped by nescience. And under the spell of ignorance, the living entity claims that the Lord is responsible for his conditioned existence. The Vedanta Sutra 2.134 also confirms this. Vaishamya nagrinye na sapikshatvatta hi darshayati. The Lord neither hates nor likes anyone, although he appears to. Well, there it is. Sheetal.
One statement, the translation says the Lord engages him in impious activities so that he may go to hell. Is that the reaction or?
It means that if someone desires to do that, then the Lord provides the facility. Like there's an old saying, gave him enough rope to hang himself. So he provides facility to fulfill our desire.
Because the last statement says that the Lord neither hates nor likes anyone. Though he may appear.
That's right. He's neutral. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dveshas dinapriyaha. Nabhajanti avijananti naham bhaktya. He says in the ninth chapter that he's neutral. But if somebody takes to devotional service, then he takes a special interest. But everyone he's giving facility for fulfilling their desires, and he doesn't interfere. Doesn't interfere with the desire of the living entity, even when he wants to separately enjoy from the Lord and misuses independence. The Lord gives him that facility. Yeah.
In the 14th verse translation, it says, the embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act. So, but he desires, right?
So yes.
Isn't it that called like inducing to act?
Called what?
Isn't it called inducing to act by desiring certain things?
Well, if we're talking about the soul in this verse, because the Acharyas interpret this verse variously. Sometimes they talk that this means the soul, the master of the city, the body, and sometimes they mean the super soul. But in either case, the point is the same. Living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna is supremely eternal and conscious. He has unlimited independence. The soul has minute independence. So when he desires in a certain way, Krishna fulfills his desire, even if it means the soul will attain something inauspicious. It's up to the soul. You're talking about the word inducement?
No, I was thinking the embodied spirit means the not the super soul, no, our soul, individual soul. So it says he does not induce people to act.
Mm-hmm.
That means even though I have desire, does that mean that I am not inducing myself to act? Or because the desire is the main basis for us to act in a certain way, right?
Right.
So I just got confused on that statement. Nor does he induce people to act. Even though we have desire, how can that be like? It makes sense if the embodied spirit is referred to as a super soul.
Well, there's two explanations in this verse. One's by Baladev Vidyabhusan and the other's by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. And there are others as well. And they look at it from different angles of vision. But if you take it as the super soul, then this is more to the point, you know, of what we're discussing here. And that is that Krishna doesn't involve himself with the living entity. The living entity is equal to the Lord, actually, in quality. He also has the power to decide and create and do things. But he's tiny. Therefore, he can come under the control of the material nature and implicate himself. But the Lord doesn't interfere with our independence. So when we become aware of this fact, especially when we come to the human form and we can become aware of the fact that we are, may I have a first canto? That we have an independent choice and that we've created this situation for ourselves, then we're empowered to become free from the situation as well. Pardon me?
This verse is in context to a liberated person. From the previous verses, they're talking about the Lord is speaking about somebody who's in the divine consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that person, he doesn't make any karmas. He doesn't cause other people to make karmas. That's, you know.
Previous verse, naiva kinchit karomiti yukto manyita tatvavit, that he's not connected with the body, even though the body is moving, seeing, breathing, picking up objects. He knows that he's aloof from that. That's what you're referring to. So you're making a statement.
I'm making the connection between that those verses that that's what the context of this verse is, that the Lord is speaking of a devotee, basically, who is the master of a city, and he doesn't...
Right, so that in that sense, if you see it as the living entity, I forget the exact... Baladev's... it's Vishwanath who goes, the living entity, and Baladev who speaks of this verse refers to the super soul. But you're saying, if we take it in the context of the living entity, it's somebody who's already freed from the bodily conception of life. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Here's a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada's instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam. O great sage, Narada speaking to Vyasadeva, as soon as I got a taste of the personality of Godhead, my attention to hear of the Lord was unflinching. And as my taste developed, I could realize that it was only in my ignorance that I had accepted gross and subtle coverings, for both the Lord and I are transcendental. So the experience of seeing oneself as transcendental, one realizes that I have nothing to do with this material body and the implications of the material world. I become separated from that. Means Brahma Bhuta Prasanatman Ashochatina Kangshati Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. That there's no hankering and lamentation, and one sees all living entities equally. And in that situation, one is on the threshold of bhakti. One can then properly worship Krishna because he understands Krishna's transcendental nature, can enter into devotional service, into pure devotional service. Mad bhaktim labhate param. So this all relates back to where we're making progress in this purport of the Sri Upanishad, in which I read on page 121, second paragraph, there is a gulf of difference between the living entity Atma and the controlling Lord, Paramatma, the soul and the supersoul. Paramatma is the controller and the Atma is the controlled. Therefore, they are in different categories. Because the Paramatma fully cooperates with the Atma, he is known as the constant companion of the living being, also called in the famous 529 verse, Bhuktaram Jagatapasam Sarvalokamaheshvaram Suridam Sarvabhutanam, that he's the Suhrit, or the friend of the living entity, the best kind of friend. He's fulfilling all his desires. The all-pervading feature of the Lord, continuing, which exists in all circumstances of waking and sleeping, as well as in potential states, and from which the jiva shakti, living force, is generated as both conditioned and liberated souls, is known as Brahman. Since the Lord is the origin of both Paramatma and Brahman, he is the origin of all living entities and all else that exists. One who knows this engages himself at once in the devotional service of the Lord. Such a pure and fully cognizant devotee of the Lord is fully attached to him in heart and soul. And whenever such a devotee assembles with similar devotees, they have no engagement but the glorification of the Lord's transcendental activities. Those who are not as perfect as the pure devotees, namely those who have realized only the Brahman or Paramatma features of the Lord, cannot appreciate the activities of the perfect devotees. The Lord always helps the pure devotees by imparting necessary knowledge within their hearts. And thus, out of his special favor, he dissipates all the darkness of ignorance. The speculative philosophers and yogis cannot imagine this, because they more or less depend on their own strength. As stated in the Katha Upanishad 1.2.23, the Lord can be known only by those whom he favors and not by anyone else. Could you look that verse up? Nayamatma pravachanina labhyona medayana bahuta nushritena. Such special favors are bestowed upon his pure devotees only. Sri Ishapanishad thus points to the favor of the Lord, which is beyond the purview of the Brahmajyoti. So, once again confirming, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And if you know Krishna, then you know everything. Yoma mema masam mudo janati purushottamam sa sarva bhajatimam sarva pavina bharata. If you know Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you're the knower of everything, and you're in the best position. Can you? Oh, you got a mic. Go ahead.
Nayam atma pravachanena labhyo namedhaya na bahuna shrutena yameivaisha vrinute tena labhyas tasyaisha atma vivrinute tanum swam.
What page?
359.
359 in your shloka book.
The Supreme Lord is not attained by expert explanations, by vast intelligence, nor even by much hearing. He is attained only by one who he himself chooses. To such a person, he manifests his own form.
This is referring to the Katha Upanishad. The Lord can be known only to those whom he favors. After all, he's independent. He can bestow his mercy on those. There's a story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about Pundarik Vidyanidhi, who was a great devotee of the Lord. And when he went to Jagannath Puri on Odana Shasti, it's a special day in which they offer the Lord new cloth. But he went and he saw the ceremony, and they offered the Lord unwashed brand new cloth. It was still starched. You know how when you get from the shop, you try to put on a dhoti and it's just like very stiff, you know, you can't tie it or do anything with. Anyway, they offered this cloth to the Lord, and he was thinking, what are they doing that for? Why are they offering the Lord unwashed, starched cloth like that? And he became a little bit indignant about it. And in his mind, he was thinking, why are they doing that? And then that night, he was sleeping, and Lord Jagannath and Lord Baladev came to him in a dream. And he said, why are you criticizing my servants? These devotees are very dear to me. And they began slapping his cheeks. And he was it hurt. And he was, "Oh my Lord, please stop." When he woke up, his cheeks were swollen. He had been smacked around by the Lord. And some of the other devotees recognized what had happened and glorified him as such a great devotee. But one of the points there was just that the Lord, he becomes attached to certain kinds of devotees for their devotional service. I might think, you know, what's that guy doing here? What does he deserve? But it's up to the Lord. He can decide who he likes and who he doesn't like. He's fully independent. Nayamatma pravachane nalabhyo. You can't attain if, you know, you think you can attain through some process, actually. But actually, it's the favor of the Lord. It's a descending process. And as was pointed out in the beginning of this purport, the three levels of understanding of the Lord, most people, through speculation, they can come to this point of understanding the impersonal Brahman, because it's sort of like the opposite of material life. Material life means variety, color, shape, form, everything temporary. And then in Brahmajyoti, there's a sameness to everything. And there's an eternality that you experience there. So through speculation, one can come to this understanding of impersonal Brahman. But one can't come to the understanding of Bhagavan at all through speculation. It's only through mercy, through the descending process. So these prayers in Sri Shapanishad, this prayer, Pushan Ekarshe Yama Surya Prajapatya Vyuharashmin Samuhatejo Yatte Rupam Kalyanatamam Tate Pashami Yosavasau Purushamasmi. The devotee is praying, please. He's saying, calling the Lord many wonderful names, and remembering his qualities, how he's the maintainer, Pushani Karshe, Ikarishi, he's the first rishi, he's the original person, Yama, he's the regulating principle, Prajapatya, he's the benefactor of the Prajapatis in the universe, Suri, he's the destination of the pure devotees, Kalyanatamam, he's all auspicious, and then he realizes that I'm a particle, I'm a eternal servant and a particle, just like the Lord in quality. So he prays to the Lord for his special mercy that he can see his form, and he'll reveal his all auspicious form to him. Tate rupam kalyanatamam, his all auspicious form. So Brahman is auspicious, and Paramatma is more auspicious, and Bhagavan is the most auspicious form of the Lord. And if one just thinks of the form of the Lord, then, as we discussed earlier, Ananyas Chintayam Tomam. If you just think of me, Krishna says, fix your mind on me, one who's always meditating on me, that person is lacking nothing. Krishna carries all intelligence, all facility, preserves his advancement in devotional service in every way. Especially by hearing. This is a... Can I have a fourth canto? Fourth canto, 20th chapter. By hearing about the Lord, is hearing and chanting is actually the key to advancement in spiritual life. It's the source of all our advancement. Thank you. Oops. Fourth canto. 22, 20. Sorry for the delay. We're having technical difficulties. It'll be worth it, though, I promise you.
Okay, here it is. I got something special for you. Are you ready? These are some instructions by Sanat Kumara to Prithu Maharaj. You want to hear them? Sanat Kumara continued, "My dear King, you already have an inclination to glorify the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such attachment is very difficult to achieve. But when one has attained such unflinching faith in the Lord, it automatically cleanses lusty desires from the core of the heart. It has been conclusively decided in the scriptures, after due consideration, that the ultimate goal for the welfare of human society is detachment from the bodily concept of life and increased and steadfast attachment for the Supreme Lord, who is transcendental beyond the modes of material nature. Attachment for the Supreme can be increased by practicing devotional service, inquiring about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, applying bhakti yoga in life, worshipping the Yogeshvara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by hearing and chanting about the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These actions are pious in themselves. One has to make progress in spiritual life not by associating with persons who are simply interested in sense gratification and making money. Not only such persons, but one who associates with such persons should be avoided. One should mold his life in such a way that he cannot live in peace without drinking the nectar of the glorification of the Supreme Personality of God in Hari. One can be thus elevated by being disgusted with the taste for sense gratification." Pardon me? I can repeat it. "One has to make progress in spiritual life by not associating with persons who are simply interested in sense gratification and making money. Not only such persons, but one who associates with such persons should be avoided. One should mold his life in such a way that he cannot live in peace without drinking the nectar of the glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. One can thus be elevated by being disgusted with the taste for material sense enjoyment." There's a couple important points here. Association, of course, Krishna consciousness is the science of association. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked, "What is a devotee?" What did he say? Asat sanga tyag e vaishnavachar. He's somebody who avoids asat sanga. That means somebody who's in maya, who thinks there's something separate from Krishna or a separate goal in life than attaining Krishna consciousness. But worse than associating with a materialistic person is a person who associates with a materialistic person. There's a corollary in devotional service. That's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, that this association between men and women is the root cause of material existence. Pum sastriya maituni bhavamitam tayomito hridaya grantamahu. There's an illusion there. The female body, male body, it's everywhere. In all of creation, this is described, we read in the Brahma Samhita, about how linga yonyatmika jata ima maheshvare praja. In the beginning, there's the Maheshwar and his counterpart, Durga. And when they come together, there's the linga and the yoni, and that's manifest in all the different species of life. The male and female generating organs, and there's an attraction, pumsa striya. There's the male and the female, pumsa striya maituni bhavametam. And the only taste in the material world, there is only one taste, actually, and that is the taste of maitunya argara, which means this attraction for sex. It's what keeps everything going in the material world, the attraction of the two opposites, the male and the female. So Rishabhadev says, pumsa striya maituni bhavametam tayomrito hridaya grantamahu. It creates a hard knot within the heart. So therefore, Vedic culture, the whole Varnashram system, from the very beginning to the very end, has one purpose, so one can become detached from the association with the opposite sex, ultimately, because that's the binding force in the material world. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, men should avoid the unnecessary association with women, for this is the cause of becoming attached, more attached to the material world. And therefore, but he says, more dangerous than a man associating with a woman is associating with a man who is attached to associating with a woman. So in the corollary, he says, associating with Krishna is very powerful. But more powerful than associating with Krishna is associating with somebody who is attached to Krishna. Has a spiritual counterpart. Also, one should mold his life in such a way that he cannot live in peace without drinking the nectar of the glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. This is similar to what Rupa Goswami says. Tanam Rupa Charitari Sukirtananu Smrityo Karmena Rasana Manasi Niyoja. He says that one should mold one's life in such a way that you can spend one's entire time hearing and chanting about the Lord. And ultimately, you should be living in a holy place and take shelter of the Lord in that way. So, is one of the symptoms of advancement in spiritual life called avyarta kalatvam, which means that one doesn't want to waste a second. If one wastes a second outside of the connection with transcendental sound vibration, then that devotee becomes, how does it say here? One should mold his life in such a way he cannot live in peace. So you should feel unrest when you're separated from the service of the Lord, from the transcendental sound vibration of the Lord. If you feel that, if you begin to feel that anxiousness when you're separated from that, that's a sign of advancing in spiritual life. Okay? A candidate for spiritual advancement must be nonviolent, must follow in the footsteps of great acharyas. What is the definition of nonviolence? Who wants to give me the deepest, most esoteric meaning according to our line of acharyas? Not hurting anybody? Okay, we can go further than that. That's very nice. That's true. Ahimsa means not to hurt anybody. But we could even go a step further than that in our line. Sham? And then Hansapriya? Huh? Oh, let's use the microphone.
What I remember from Bhagavad Gita is to not put anybody in distress or to not take someone out of ignorance.
There you go. That's the proactive side. Nonviolence, we could say, means not hurting anybody, but also means to not preach Krishna consciousness. In other words, if I have medicine, say if I have water and there's a, like people are, you know, there was an earthquake and people are dying of thirst and I don't give it to them. Am I culpable? Can I be held responsible for that if I don't distribute it? Yes, it's violence. If there's an epidemic going on and I have the medicine but I won't distribute it, is that violence? Yeah, it's violence. This is what the other aspect of violence is. If I have knowledge and I don't give it to other people, like if I have knowledge somebody's about to step off the curb and get hit by a bus and I just say, "Nah, I'm in a hurry." That's violence. I didn't act on it. I didn't give something that I could have helped somebody with. So this is also definition of nonviolence. It's proactive in a sense. It means, you know, someone might think nonviolence means I'll just sit there and I won't hurt anybody. As long as I don't hurt anybody. It's impossible in this world anyway. Just by breathing, we're killing living beings. By lighting a fire to cook food, you kill. By using your mortar and pestle, you're crushing bugs. By walking around, you kill. Just by eating, you kill. We kill. We're violent. But if we actually engage in Krishna service, preach the message of Bhagavad Gita to others, it frees them from the material world. This means real nonviolence, proactive nonviolence. So in one place, Prabhupada says, violence means to stop the preaching of the message of Krishna consciousness. To stop the preaching. So, A candidate for spiritual advancement must be nonviolent, must follow in the footsteps of the great acharyas. This is very important because we have a point of reference in spiritual life. Means that we have to follow shastra, and we also have to follow sadhu, and we also have to follow guru. These are three counterpoints. If you put one dot on a page, how many lines can you draw through it? All you trigonometry students out there. Huh? Infinite. And if you put two dots on a page, how many lines do you get when you connect them? Huh? One line. So when you have counterpoints, guru, sadhu, and shastra, then the line becomes clear. If you only take guru, you say guru, guru, guru. No. Then shastra, shastra, shastra. There may be different statements in shastra. You may also not get it right. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. No. Guru, guru, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, guru. Guru, sadhu, shastra. There's a counterbalance there, and one must learn to follow that properly to be able to tell how to progress in spiritual life and how to situate oneself properly. This is what the great acharyas do. One must always remember the nectar of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who can tell me some pastime of Krishna, some part of a pastime that you heard that was nectarian? Okay, go ahead. Because it says here...
You said nectarian, I said every single one.
Every single one? Okay, well, give me one example, something specific. How about when Krishna chastised Kaliya? What happened? He came to the Jamuna. Actually, the coward boys came to the Jamuna, and the cows came to the Jamuna. And what happened? The Jamuna had been poisoned. It was so poisonous, even birds flying over, just from the vapors coming out of the Jamuna, they would drop dead. And when the boys and the cows came close to the Jamuna, they also dropped dead. And then when Krishna came there, he brought them back to life, and then he decided to chastise Kaliya. So he got up on the tree, which is overhanging there, and he tightened his belt, he flapped his arms, like a wrestler, and he jumped into the water. And when he jumped into that, there's a little lake that forms right down there by Kaliya Ghat. The Jamuna's running through, but then there's a little lake form in the interim part. So he jumped in, and the water overflowed its banks like some big heavy object had gone into the water. Even though he was just a small boy, he jumped in, and the water overflowed. And then he began swimming in the water, and the noise of his swimming irritated Kaliya, because that was his lake, and he was there, and his poisonous vapors were poisoning everything. And as Krishna swam towards Kaliya, he became very irritated. Who's bothering me in my lake with all this splashing sound? And he saw Krishna coming. So he began to fight with Krishna, and at one point he grabbed him in his coils and he held him, and Krishna stayed in the coils of Kaliya for 2 hours. Then, when everyone heard what was going on down in the Jamuna, they came running. And when they saw Krishna, their most beloved, the one that they were always thinking of, wrapped in the coils of this big snake, many-hooded snake within the Jamuna River, they began to faint. They would faint out of seeing Krishna in that condition, thinking that he was in harm's way. This was the end for them. But what about Balaram? He knew Krishna was all-powerful. He could see he was just playing with this big snake. So he was smiling the whole time. And he was preventing them from also going in the water. They all wanted to run in and save Krishna, because they thought, our little boy's in there. It's like if you saw your child, you know, in the middle of the 101 freeway or something. So Mother Yashoda was like that. She was paralyzed with this anxiety. And so Balaram began to calm them down. And then Krishna came out of the grip of Kaliya and began dancing in the hoods, jumping from one to the next, dancing. And actually, he was really showing off. because he knew that the gopis were there, and he was showing them that, look how I can dance. But as he was doing this, he was knocking the poison out of Kaliya. And at the end, Kaliya was so beat up that he could barely move. He just barely had his breath left in his body. And the wives of Kaliya came and began offering their prayers to the Lord, saying how fortunate was their husband, that great yogis, they try to get a little bit of Krishna's attention, and they're always meditating on his lotus feet. But here, our husband, somehow or other, he's been benedicted so that you danced on his head, so that dust of your lotus feet are all over his hoods everywhere. That other people, they wish they could be so fortunate. So then Krishna said, you go away from this place. You go elsewhere, but you can't stay here. And he went away. And he was united with his cows and his family and his boyfriends. So there are many pastimes there that are within the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada consolidated all that within the Krishna book. So if we hear those pastimes about Krishna, then janma karma ca me divyam evam yo vititatvata tyakva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sorjuna. Just by hearing those pastimes and understanding a little bit about Krishna's transcendental nature, we become liberated. We don't take birth again in this material world. So it says here, one must always remember the nectar of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, must follow the regulative principles without material desire, and while following the regulative principles, should not blaspheme others. A devotee should lead a very simple life and not be disturbed by the duality of opposing elements. He should learn to tolerate them. Opposing elements. Learn to tolerate them. Text 25. The devotee should gradually increase the culture of devotional service by constant hearing of the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These pastimes are like ornamental decorations on the ears of devotees. By rendering devotional service and transcending the material qualities, one can easily be fixed in transcendence in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Upon being fixed in his attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by the grace of the spiritual master, and by awakening knowledge and detachment, the living entity situated within the heart of the body and covered by the five elements burns up his material surroundings exactly as fire arising from wood burns the wood itself. When a person becomes devoid of all material desires and liberated from all material qualities, he transcends distinctions between actions executed externally and internally. At that time, the difference between the soul and the supersoul, which was existing before self-realization, is annihilated. When a dream is over, there's no longer a distinction between the dream and the dreamer. When the soul exists for sense gratification, he creates different desires, and for that reason he becomes subjected to designations. But when one is in the transcendental position, he is no longer interested in anything except fulfilling the desires of the Lord. Only because of different causes does a person see a difference between himself and others, just as one sees the reflection of a body appearing differently manifested on water, on oil, or in a mirror. When one's mind and senses are attracted to sense objects for enjoyment, the mind becomes agitated. As a result of continually thinking of sense objects, one's real consciousness almost becomes lost, just like the water in a lake that is gradually sucked up by the big grass straws on its bank. May I read that again? When one's mind and senses are attracted to sense objects for enjoyment, the mind becomes agitated. As a result of continually thinking of sense objects, one's real consciousness almost becomes lost, like the water in a lake that is gradually sucked up by the big grass straws on its bank. When one deviates from his original consciousness, he loses the capacity to remember his previous position or recognize his present one. When remembrance is lost, all knowledge acquired is based on a false foundation. When this occurs, learned scholars consider that the soul is lost. There is no stronger obstruction to one's self-interest than thinking other subject matters to be more pleasing than one's self-realization. For human society, constantly thinking of how to earn money and apply it for sense gratification brings about the destruction of everyone's interests. When one becomes devoid of knowledge and devotional service, he enters into species of life like those of trees and stones. Those who strongly desire to cross the ocean of nescience must not associate with the modes of ignorance, for hedonistic activities are the greatest obstructions to realization of religious principles, economic development, regulated sense gratification, and at last, liberation. Out of the four principles, namely religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, liberation has to be taken very seriously. The other three are subject to destruction by the stringent laws of nature, death. We accept as blessings different states of higher life, distinguishing them from lower states of life, but we should know that such distinctions exist only in relation to the interchange of the modes of material nature. Actually, these states of life have no permanent existence, for all of them will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller. Sanat Kumara advised the king, "Therefore, my dear King Prithu, try to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is living within everyone's heart, along with the individual soul, in each and every body, either moving or not moving. The individual souls are fully covered by the gross material body and subtle body made of the life air and intelligence." The Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests himself as one with the cause and effect within the body. But one who has transcended the illusory energy by deliberate consideration, which clears the misconception of a snake for a rope, can understand that the Paramatma is eternally transcendental to the material creation and situated in pure internal energy. Thus the Lord is transcendental to all material contamination. Unto him one must surrender. Now here comes a huge verse. This is 4:22:39. Yat pada pankacha palasya vilasya bhaktya karma shayam gratitam udgratayanti santa tadvanna rikta matayo yatayo pirudha sroto ganas tam aranam bhajavasudevam. Anybody know that verse? You know it? The devotees who are always engaged in the service of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord can very easily overcome hard-knotted desires for fruitive activities. Because this is very difficult, the non-devotees, the jnanis and yogis, although trying to stop the waves of sense gratification, cannot do so. Therefore, you are advised to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudev. Hare Krishna. There's something. Hare Krishna. 4:22:39. Page 217 in your shloka books. Did we finish the... Yeah, we finished the Ishapanishad purport, didn't we? Okay. All right. How's everybody? Okay. We had a nice trip to Los Angeles. Manju was there. Vipul was there. It was a big festival. A lot of kirtan. We got to do Sankirtan down at Venice Beach, along with the Harinam Sankirtan. That was nice. I saw Vipul was all over the place. There was like 10 Vipuls. Everywhere I looked, there was Vipul at Venice Beach, running from one person to the next, distributing books. Was it good? It was okay. It was really good for us. I was with a group of devotees, and sometimes there were five, sometimes there were six, and we were going around. And a couple of things that happened were really fun. One guy, I really had to talk to him for a little while to convince him to buy a book. So he gave a donation. And then we went away and we were talking to four kids. And I was thinking while I was down there how important youth is, because it's such an impressionable, formidable, it's a time when, you know, they're growing into their own personalities, developing habits that will last for the rest of their lives, impressions and things like that. And how exposed the youth of America are to all kinds of unsavory things. It's youth of the world. Why stop there? You know, all over the world, you know, just through the internet and all kinds of, you know, kinds of association ideas. Anyway, there was these four kids, and I could just feel how I felt from them. They must have been their teens, early teens, and how they were trying so hard to find their identities, and they had different kind of costumes on, some rings and things like that, and some hats, and they were still kind of innocent, though. And I was talking to them. I was showing them the books, and there was one really quiet kid. His name was Eric. He was standing on this side, and he was barely saying anything. And then the other three, there was two. One was the ringleader, who was really boisterous. And there was a young woman there who was also, you know, she held her own. But we were talking. I was showing him the books. And then the guy, about a half hour before, that, the one I told you, he bought a book. And then... you know, it was kind of hard to convince him, but he finally bought a book. And then he came over and he was watching. Were you there for this, Anjan? Yeah. So this guy was watching. And then I introduced everybody. There must have been like five of us at that point, because Hansa Kati was there and you were there. There were like... Banabata was there. And also Madhavananda was there. There was a bunch of us there. So I said, everyone introduce yourself. So all the devotees were introducing themselves to all the kids, and they were introducing themselves to us. And then the other guy we sold a book to a little earlier, he was standing there watching because he was trying to figure out what happened, you know, how he bought a book. He was like curious. He was like, well, who are these people, you know, down here selling books? And he was standing there watching us, watching the kids. And I said, you introduce yourself. So he introduced himself. And then the kids, I said, you know, give a donation. So they were going, well, maybe this, maybe that. And one of them finally gave some change or something. I can't remember the exact order of events, but I told the other guy who just came over, I said, now you should give a donation. He goes, but he already bought a book. And I said, no, you should give for them, because you'll get twice the benefit that you got for buying it for yourself. You'll get twice the benefit. And I could see it registering as he thought about it. And previously it was hard to get him to give a donation. And then he goes, okay. So he gives a donation for the four kids. And then it just broke loose. And then the four kids started pulling out, you know, their donations. And then finally Eric over on the side, who had been quiet the whole time, and I had noticed him. I said to the other kids, because they were hesitant on giving a donation, I said, don't worry, Eric's going to bail you out here. And he did. And he pulled out a donation, you know, that covered, it was more than the other ones gave. And so he gave a donation. Then they all ended up giving something. And the other guy who walked over gave a donation. And the energy just went to the moon, because, you know, everyone was engaging in Krishna's service and it had come wide open. And here we are in the middle of Venice Beach with crazy people on every side. I mean, it's the craziest place on the planet. I always call it the Viraja River, because we have Rath Yatra on one side and then there's this pandemonium on the other side. And when you leave the Rath Yatra, you have to enter through this crazy, you know, mixture of the modes of material nature to get back to your vehicle. But that's one thing that happened that was really exciting. And there were a lot of other nice experiences down there, meeting people in the midst of this big crowd. One thing's for sure, when the Harinam Sankirtan's going on, it pierces the covering of the three modes of material nature. If you're just there alone and there's no Harinam down there, it would be very thick, right? When the Harinam goes by, or even it was there 10 minutes ago, still that power, the effect of the holy name. Apana samsritim gauran yanama vivashogrinan tato sadhya vimucheta yad bipeti swayambayam. The name of Krishna is feared by fear personified, and therefore it breaks open this material atmosphere. and makes people open to taking the Krishna consciousness by hearing Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. How was the weekend here? It was quiet? You had a big sale out front, right? And I saw you sold books, but I didn't understand. You reported that there was 18 sets of Srimad Bhagavatams? Oh. Oh, okay. It said 18 large Srimad Bhagavatam set, and I thought, should have been like $10,000 there. Oh, all right. Nice. Any other questions? Or realizations? You're all practicing, so what are you carrying? What realizations are moving you forward these days? Vipul.
Well, I have a question.
Okay.
A little out of context, but I had that question, you know. So a Vaishnava, he sees a human being as a human being, and he doesn't use them as things, right? He doesn't exploit them as things. A materialistic person, he sees people as things and he exploits them. Now, how does a Brahmavadi sees? He does not have love for Krishna, but he has he knows that he's not this body, and he may be thinking that Brahman is the ultimate thing. Now, how does he see the people, and how is his, I don't understand, how is his look?
He sees them equally. When Shukadeva Goswami is a good example of a Brahmavadi. When he left home, Yam pravajantam anupetyam apetyakrityam dvaipayano viraha kartara ajuhava. He had no attachments, even his father was calling after him in separation. And what was heard but the echo of the trees, who were also in the same feelings of separation. And when he went by, there was a kund, and there were a bunch of women there bathing. And when he went by, Shukadeva Goswami walked by that kund, leaving his home. They didn't dress themselves. They looked at him and they thought, nothing to worry about here. They didn't feel any kind of resistance or anything. He just walked by, and then Srila Vyasadeva, his father, came chasing after him, and they all jumped up and put on their clothes immediately. So it's asked why that was, but they could experience that he had no differentiation between one person and another. No differentiation at all. He saw that they were, you know, he didn't make distinction between male and female, and they could feel that. So Brahmavadi is equipoised in all circumstances, doesn't see differences in that sense. And also maybe in Shantaras, the beginning kind of appreciation of the Lord. There's no feeling of service there, that Dasya hasn't come in, but may have feeling, just overwhelming feeling of appreciation for the Lord, Brahmavadi. So there's a passive kind of sense there in the Brahmavadis, how he engages in his own service and relates to others in an equal way. Is that right? Okay. Anything else that you're thinking of? Yes. That it's hot?
No.
Oh.
So how to bring it today? Because so much changed when it was introduced by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur or even Srila Prabhupada when he started. Because the environment is so dynamic. Everywhere it's different environment. In America, in India, even localized. So how to harmonize everything or how to put into practical application of Krishna consciousness.
Well, there has to be realization. There's no substitute for that at all. One has to have realization. How we interact with others, how we conduct ourselves in this life, it has to do with realization. A very important verse that Prabhupada brings up, Vishaya vinivartante niraharasa dehina rasavarjam rasopyasya param jusva nivartate, that when one's experienced some superior taste, then he gives up the lower taste. And also there's an uncanny kind of sense control that takes place in somebody that is has experienced a higher taste. Because actually, you know, devotees, in a sense, you know, internally anyway, they become unhinged, literally. You've heard this term? Oh, such and such became unhinged. Or they say, he became unglued. My mother used to say that. Yeah, he really became unglued. It means, you know, like from a materialistic point of view, you know, someone like goes crazy or something like that, they kind of lose their orientation to the material world. So devotees, they experience a higher taste. They become unglued, unhinged from the normal course of work in the material world. And they have a connection to the Supersoul. They have a connection to Krishna. Tesham satata yuktanam pajatam prittipurvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam jnanam upayanti te. Their life is very sweet and dynamic at every second because they're moving at every second to please Krishna, to serve Krishna. And somebody in that kind of consciousness, or somebody taking guidance from somebody in that kind of consciousness, naturally knows how to harmonize wherever they go. And they also have a direction in life. There's something to be done that's got structure, that's important. They have vision to see that the importance of making some progress, some actual tangible progress and structure so that others can come into it and take advantage of Krishna consciousness. So you see that in the great acharyas like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, there's an urgency to create systems and to, you know, Prabhupada was creating systems before he came to America. You can read his early letters. He was conceiving how many, many devotees would get trained in Krishna consciousness. He had this idea, training schools where people would come in and they would become Brahmins. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, similarly, he was thinking about these things all the time. So definitely we have challenge, you know, in the modern world. But we can see all the acharyas, any kind of teacher, they've always had a challenge. The material world's a challenging place. One devotee came to Prabhupada and was talking about all her, you know, the problems that she was having and difficulties and wondering how, you know, that related to her spiritual life. And Prabhupada said, you're expecting a calm sea, you know. But there is none in the material world. There's no calm sea. You know, those storms come one after another in the material world. So there's difficulty here. It's one thing we should accept. If you accept it, that there's great difficulty. But it becomes like nectar if we're engaged in the service of the Lord to accept those kinds of challenges. Modern age, there's so many opposing opinions, even in spiritual realm. You get involved in the spiritual realm, there's all kinds of different opinions going in every different direction, right? So we have to not succumb to frustration or anger in those circumstances. Is that for me? Anybody calling me? Krishna says, Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha. There's different tendencies of a materialistic person. These are contaminations. Raga means become attached to the material world. It's a kind of a weakness of heart. And bhaya means a fearfulness of taking up spiritual life because material life's so bad, it's so painful that one might think that this description of the personalism that's coming from the Srimad Bhagavatam, for example, it also sounds troublesome. I don't believe that it'll actually be full of bliss and full of knowledge. It'll be painful, I'm thinking, because my experience here with variety and person and relationships is painful. So one has to give up that fear. And anger, this is prevalent a lot in Kali Yuga. People get angry that there's so many differences of opinion. In other words, you know, somebody takes the Krishna consciousness or spiritual life in any way, and everyone's at him. Like we were down on Venice Beach, as an example. Anjan was there. And we met this, the man was from some part of Africa, and the woman was from Bulgaria, right? And she was this really heavy Christian, fanatical Christian. And the guy had some kind of innocence to him, although he was hanging out with this lady. I don't know why. I couldn't figure out why those two were together. They were just an odd couple. But they stopped, and they were like really fascinated with us. And they let us tell the whole thing about the Bhagavad Gita. And then the guy, the man, started telling us his whole philosophy about how, you know, actually, remember what he said, Anjan? He said something about how, you know, God has to, the spirit has to enter you. He's not there until he enters, and then once he enters, and then how could he be in a book, you know? So then I kind of got heavy on him, and I started telling him, well, if God's everywhere and he's all powerful, how come he can't be in the book? What kind of God is that? He can't come into a book. What are you talking about? And then, anyway, then he started, you know, espousing this really open-minded philosophy about how, you know, anybody could take to God consciousness. It was open to everybody. It wasn't some doctrine, because I think he was kind of thinking that I was telling him something that was restrictive, and therefore it was like a doctrine or something, but it's open to everybody could understand. Then the lady jumps in, and she starts grabbing my hand and saying, you know, do you know Lord Jesus Christ? He's the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father by you. You know, and then so I said to the man, I said, now, you know, do you really listen to her? I mean, are you falling for this stuff? And he, you know, he started opening up. He ended up buying a book, that guy. And how was I on that point? Vitaraga Paya Krodha. So like I was just thinking down there at Venice Beach, everywhere you go, everywhere you stop, everyone has some philosophy. Some people's philosophy is, you know, it doesn't matter. Sense enjoyment is the pinnacle. Just enjoy now because you're going to die anyway. And lots of other people have their own nuance in some spiritual philosophy. Everyone you stop, they have some, you know, angle. And so Krishna says, then you can become angry that there's so many things, and you just out of frustration, you say, well, I can't understand it. You know, there must be nothing. Because there's so many different opinions, there must be nothing. No, but you have to follow Shastra. You have to take shelter of Shastra, because there has to be an axiomatic truth. In any discipline, in any science, you have to accept axiomatic truth and understand this is the basics. And there are standard books of knowledge, and there are acharyas. And there's a way in which you can actually take shelter of those, and you'll make progress, make real progress. So our foundational point in our own lives has to be, you know, we have to be guided by guru, sadhu, and shastra. These three things, these three counterpoints. And if we take that, we will not be mistaken, and we will act properly in this world. And if not, ye shastra vidam utsrija vartite kama karatha nasa siddham avapnoti nasukham na param gatim. Krishna says, if you don't follow shastra, you don't get happiness, you don't get the supreme destination. What else don't you get?
Peace.
You don't get happiness either. And you don't get peace. You know, peace, happiness, supreme destination, nothing. Ashradhana purusha dharma syasya parantapa aprapyamam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. Krishna says, one who is faithless, a faithless person, is on the path of mrityu, of death. He enters back into the path of birth and death again in this material world. So our job is to spread faith, encourage people in faith, and we have to be faithful ourselves, and we develop firm faith, siddhanta bulya chitta nakara alash, by not being lazy. We can't be lazy. We have to understand Shastra very clearly. A siddhanta means not just what something is, but also what it isn't. There's a purvapaksha. There's a way in which the Vedanta Sutra presents, first gives the thesis, then antithesis, then the synthesis. And by this, you clearly understand, says Kaviraj Goswami, what it means, what Shastra is talking about. You have to corroborate all these things, corroborate what the guru is saying with the Shastra and what the sadhus, how the sadhus act. All these things have to corroborate it. Then you can act properly in your life. And if you have a, that means in your life, in your house, in your neighborhood, if you have a society, like we have a society here, we have International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and we're a branch of that here. If we act on those principles in our group, then we have a guide. We're all persons. We all have different directions. We all have different innovations and different ways of thinking. But if we follow the under the umbrella of Guru Sadhu Shastra, we'll act properly. And we'll be able to expand that shelter for other people, that other people can come in, because they're getting creamed out there. There's all kinds of ways that people are getting chopped up by the stringent laws of material nature. So we have to create a shelter. This was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's great, you know, wish and desire and vision. It was the desire of all the acharyas to see. You know, just like at Naimasaranya, the devotees, they all came together for a 1,000-year sacrifice. What was their intention when they went there to Naimasaranya? They wanted to find out what was the ultimate good for all the people in Kali Yuga. It was a huge sangha. They were coming together to brainstorm and find out what's the best thing for all the people in the world. And then they got Sutta Goswami up there, who was, you know, qualified, and they said, okay, tell us. And he began speaking, and that was the whole purpose of the yajna. So if that's our intention and we follow Guru Sadhu and Shastra, then we can also, by the grace of the acharyas, we can become empowered. If we actually, that's our intention to take up this line of the Thakur, and we follow strictly Guru Sadhu and Shastra, take their mission, we can do unlimited kinds of service to expand their mercy and give people shelter. Rakshit Prabhu?
Just a comment.
And we need a microphone down here fast, because I don't think you can hold it back.
Were mentioning about Shastra and difference of opinion, that we find, even with Shastra like the Bhagavad Gita, that there is varied opinions. Just an example that I come across during book distribution, people whom if I give a book, they say, who are you with? So I say, ISKCON. Says, thank you. I am with the Advaita philosophy. And I've often come across these people. So, no, thank you. I'm with Advaita. So when I read up about Advaita, they interpret the Bhagavad Gita. They have their own commentators and translators. And their interpretation is all this impersonalism, that your ultimate goal is self-realization, and you will, and that is the same as God realization. You will become God. It is not that only sect that does that. Recently, I came across another one. Somebody gave me a translation of a very famous saint, if you will, or acharya in India, Satya Sai Baba, and I read his translation of the Bhagavad Gita, and it is also on impersonalism. You become God. So it would seem that even with Shastra, there are challenges, because there are people out there, there are groups out there who are interpreting it differently from the way, for example, our line of acharyas interprets, where we maintain that God is a person and a living entity is God-like, and you can achieve self-realization and come to a platform of transcendental relationship, but that the identity is maintained. You are not merging, and you are not becoming God. That challenge is there, and that difference of opinion exists, I find.
Oh, yes. Definitely there. And this is why the acharyas, like Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, they were so strong on these points to put forth very clear understanding. This is what the acharyas do to pave the path for others. They, like the Goswamis, Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipunosha Dharma Samstapako. Their business was to take the Shastra and to make it available so that people could consume it. It's like Niagara Falls. If you try to put a little tin cup out there, get a drink, it'll just pull you right into the, you know, there's billions of gallons coming down at every second. So the Shastra is like that. It can be overwhelming, actually. So the Acharyas, like the Goswamis, they made a lake down below of that Niagara Falls where anybody could go and, you know, drink and take the knowledge. That's what the Acharyas do. They make it available. They make it clear. And in our line, there's no dearth of great philosophers. Jiva Goswami arguably is the greatest philosopher of all time, if you analyze his life and his writings and what he achieved, and all of the Goswamis in their literatures. And they have clearly established through bringing in all evidence from all Shastras, you know, clear understanding about Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and presenting it in such a way that anybody can come and take shelter. And then those teachings, they all follow the lines of the previous acharyas, the great acharyas who are represented from the beginning of time, practically. And by taking shelter and following the footsteps of those great acharyas, one can understand clearly the proper path. Not only that, if one analyzes Bhagavad Gita itself, from the perspective of Krishna and how Krishna is speaking, one should be able to understand also that Krishna is a person. These impersonalist interpretations, actually, they twist and they turn and they struggle very hard to make some kind of a wrangled meaning out of something that's very simple and clear. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Krishna's speaking, he says, think of me. And then someone has to come and twist that and say, it means think of somebody else, or it doesn't mean think of Krishna when he's right there speaking it. And Prabhupada says, Kurukshetra means Kurukshetra. Doesn't mean anything else. It's right there. When the plain meaning is clear, you take the plain meaning. And it's very clear. Ultimately, so there's praman. Shastra praman means evidence. You have to take evidence. And of course, people use it in different ways to establish different opinions. Jiva Goswami says in one of his sandarbhas that the ultimate evidence is your own experience. So therefore, bhakti parishanu bhavo viraktir anyatra traisha trika eka kala. There's an experience that one must have oneself and see for oneself. And Krishna says, pratyakshavagamam dharmyam. It's the perfection of religion. It's directly perceived. You can see this for yourself. And if a hungry man eats food, he becomes satisfied by it. The impersonalist understanding ultimately is not satisfying. And therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Aruya Krishchena Parambadam Tata. Those who take it up, the hard labor of trying to understand this that God's impersonal or that I'm God, ultimately, due to lack of engagement, they fall back down again into material enjoyment. Whereas bhakti is so satisfying that even if one runs with one's eyes closed in bhakti, he will not trip and fall, because it's pleasing to the Lord. But this is case in point. Fact is, there are no it may be clear, but there's always opposing opinions, and there's always decisions to make, not just in our regular life, but also in our spiritual life as well. Yeah, there's always decisions to make. And therefore, we must carefully take guidance of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra throughout our life. And sometimes you take help from those sources, you know, from the devotees, from the Shastra, from what the Acharyas have said, and then you have to make the best possible decision you can. You may not even be absolutely sure when you're taking that decision until you see the result of it, or you may learn from it and then adjust your course. But there are many cases, because the world's, there's a lot of moving parts. But if one's good, if one's intention is good, and is one's trying to follow the authority properly, then Krishna also gives guidance from within the heart. Tesham satata yuktanam pajatam pritipurvakam. This Prabhupada's famous purport. I'll just read this as the finishing point here. From the verse in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Tesham satata yuktanam, it's 10:10. And it's on page 460, and the translation is, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Purport. In this verse, the word buddhi yogam is very significant. We may remember that in the second chapter, the Lord, instructing Arjuna, said that he had spoken to him of many things, and that he would instruct him in the way of buddhi yoga. Now, buddhi yoga is explained. Buddhi yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness. That is the highest intelligence. Buddhi means intelligence, and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. When one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and takes fully to Krishna consciousness and devotional service, his action is called buddhi yoga. In other words, buddhi yoga is the process by which one gets out of the entanglement of this material world. The ultimate goal of progress is Krishna. People do not know this, therefore the association of devotees and a bona fide spiritual master are important. One should know that the goal is Krishna, and when the goal is assigned, then the path is slowly but progressively traversed and the ultimate goal is achieved. When a person knows the goal of life but is addicted to the fruits of activity, he is acting in karma yoga. When he knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in mental speculations to understand Krishna, he is acting in Jnana Yoga. And when he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, he is acting in Bhakti Yoga or Buddhi Yoga, which is the complete yoga. This complete yoga is the highest perfectional stage of life. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he is not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him. Krishna wants us to make progress. And he's there within the heart, so he can also guide us. Sincerity is key. In fact, Prabhupada said this, that when our party, the BBT party, was going around training devotees how to do book distribution, we asked Prabhupada about what we should be teaching the devotees, and Prabhupada said, you should teach the devotees to be sincere. Because if devotees are sincere, then everything else will come. It's a natural thing. So we have this Bhaktivinoda Thakur Monthly Sankirtan Festival. Somehow we've gotten special mercy every year. Just the fact that we're in the middle of it, that, you know, we've been given this mantle of the Bhaktivinoda Thakur Monthly Sankirtan Festival, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself is manifest here, and he's smiling at us, giving us opportunity for service. This is big service, really. And, you know, devotees recognize it everywhere we go. When I was in Los Angeles, a lot of people have heard about the activities that are going on here in this area because of the book distribution. It's big news, you know, because everyone knows it's difficult to get out of your comfort zone. It's difficult to get a bunch of people out of their comfort zones all at the same time. And when it happens, there's something special that's going on. You know, it's not ordinary to be able to organize everybody to go out at the same time and have this collective goal. It's really, really something special. So again, I mean, over and over again, we have this opportunity. We're really blessed here. I have to tell you, we're really lucky to have the association that we have all together here, where there's so many nice devotees and everyone's coming together for, I mean, what's the other purpose of coming here? Just to hear and chant and then go out and spread Krishna consciousness. There's no other motive, really. I mean, you're not getting any big money here or, you know, any kind of, I mean, what do you get? You get nectar, you get Krishna consciousness. And that's special. It's really special. So, wow, it's phone night here. Must be a sign of something. We have a lot planned for this Bhaktivinoda Thakur Monthly Sankirtan Festival. So everyone has a chance to rise to the occasion. I think that's the theme of this marathon that we do, this festival, is everyone has an opportunity to rise to the occasion. Don't wait for somebody else to rise to the occasion. You rise to the occasion. And we have this philosophy of a lot of devotees each doing a little bit. And during this marathon, you can think a lot of devotees each doing a lot. And think how individually you can do more. Anjan? Hare Krishna. Could you pass him the microphone, somebody, please?
So we were in Los Angeles, and so we went to Simi Valley for just a day. Shyamalila Prabhu, you know, inspired us to do some book distribution door-to-door. And so Bharat Prabhu was there. So we went door-to-door in a neighboring apartment, and so we gave away, like, you know, 30 or 40 books, and we got, like, $70 or $80.
Haribo!
Five of us. Yeah.
Jai. Anjan, had you been on book distribution before you came down here? Or was it your first experiences?
Once, very briefly in Portland, but otherwise
not. So what did you think?
So Prabhupada liked book distribution very much. So I think, you know, if you want to go back to Godhead, this very life, we have to preach. That's what Krishna says. And Prabhupada strongly believed that preaching is one clear way to that, you know, you're serious and sincere in your Krishna consciousness. So thank you for giving the opportunity. You know. So I think I'll
thank
take to it more with your more association.
Jai. So you can stay for the marathon, I guess, huh? Or it's going to go on up in Portland, too, probably. Yeah, book distribution is very special. Anyway, we have a whole city in front of us. Rakshit Prabhu is bringing in tons and tons of books. There'll be trucks driving up at all times of the day and night to his house to load up books. We should distribute them all as profusely, as much as possible. We don't know what the future holds. We really don't. There's no way of telling, so take advantage as much as possible now. We have our Motel Gita team. They're at a high pitch, I guarantee you. I think I'm getting more emails from them every day than any other group. And, you know, conferences going on, all kinds of plans for the Motel Gita program. We have the Smart Box program. We have door-to-door. We have our Walmarts that... Praveena Kishore already spent a lot of time earlier in the year making sure that we had these spots ready for this marathon to, you know, go out and have the Walmarts. What else do we have up our sleeve? We're pulling out all the stops, so we just want to know what we got. We have Harinam Sankirtan. Harinam Sankirtan is the most important activity in the world. When the holy names are floating in the air, then everyone who comes in contact is actually making inestimable progress in spiritual life. And it doesn't just mean human beings. It means the plants, the animals, the bugs, the germs floating everywhere. The holy name is Krishna. And especially in the Kali Yuga, this is the name we're receiving down through the parampara, this name that's coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's wound in a wreath of prema. It's very, very special. So we have Harinam Sankirtan. What else do we have up our sleeve? We have Sunday Sankirtan. So Sunday Sankirtan is special, I don't know anywhere else in ISKCON that it's going on. Where? We can patent it. But that's coming up. We're having two Sankirtan Sundays, so we'll consciously build for these events. It's a Sunday feast, you know, magnified in a special way so that everyone gets a chance to go out on book distribution on that day. So let's think ahead for those, because those are a great source of engaging devotees in this activity of preaching. Anything else we have up our sleeve? We're going to be sending books out this time because Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent books out from India. Did you know that? He went to, that must have been hard to send books out from India that time. It's hard now. You go to the library, I mean to the post office, and you just, like, at least in Vrindavan, I go to the post office and they're there working, you know, and I'm standing there for a half an hour and then it's like, they finally look up and it's like you're not even there. I don't know what it was like then to send a book out of India to McGill University and different places. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur had this idea. You know, during World War II, the Japanese had this thing. They had these little balloons they'd put up and they put bombs on them and they tried to, little fire bombs. And they were trying to float them across the Pacific Ocean so that they would land on the coast and start big forest fires and stuff like that. And they floated them, most of it didn't work very well. They landed different places. But this is the idea too, sending books out. You know, it's a little air balloon and it goes out and it lands in some place and who knows what'll. So we have this idea also during this monthly Sankirtan festival, we're going to send books out to all kinds of destinations. So if you have lists of people you're thinking of all over the world, doesn't matter where they are, let's package them up. Start writing down their addresses, package them up, and start sending them out to all kinds of places. We'll send out little air. We could send some out in air balloons too. What do you think, Sonny? Get an air balloon and send some out? We could try that. What else do we have for Bhaktivinoda? We got Sonny. Sonny's here. This is his first Bhaktivinoda Thakur monthly Sankirtan festival. Haribo! I think he's our secret weapon this time. We have a whole team now that is going to be packaging books day and night to keep us in supply, keep the supply line going. Do we have dum-dum pops? Yeah. To help for the being kept off campus? We have. There's some living entities that live here on the property that like them too much. So we can't keep the dum-dum pops on the campus. But hopefully we'll have thousands and thousands of pops to pass out. Any other things for our strategy? Okay. I'm going to Toronto this weekend because we've planned for it some time. There's a whole team of devotees up there in Brampton and also at the Toronto Temple that are ready for doing book distribution and they're, you know, want to get organized more and do some things. So we're going to be going out on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, like a little monthly Sankirtan festival up there. And officially we start, our Harinam is next weekend? Next weekend we have at least two Harinam Sankirtans because maybe we can finally have a Harinam down in Mountain View and maybe Los Altos. This weekend would be nice to have a Harinam somewhere. We could even send out a five devotee party to either Los Altos or Mountain View, just to hit the street, even for an hour on Friday. All we need is a drummer and a kartalist. If we can grab a harmonium, that's just fine. There's one kartalist back here. Let's give her a hand. Friday, Mountain View Harinam Sankirtan Party. Okay, we need like four more devotees because we have a punch-a-pod. If we have five devotees that will go out, you know, is anybody a drummer? We need another drummer here to go out on Friday. Okay, we're going to have to search you down a party. I don't know where Gaurang Kishore is. I think he went to the East Coast or something like that. But he said when he comes back, he'll be instrumental in this. He went to Columbus. This Saturday. Okay. Gopremanande Hanivo Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai Sri Isha Panishad Ki Jai Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gopremanande Hari Hari Bo Hare Krishna.